Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
All right.
Maybe this will be a little bit cooler for us. Again, thank you so much for coming. I don't want to take up too much of David's time, but I just want to tell you I've been really excited about having David Shannon from the Mount Juliet Church of Christ in here to teach us in these two sessions. We'll have one session, and you've already got the handout for that, and then we'll have a break, a little bit of a break, and then a second session. We'll try to get out of here by 8, but we're really looking forward to that. I didn't realize that he actually had a family reunion today at our Graymere Lodge. So he was not very far away at all to walk over here. But we're excited. David and Tracy have three children, Colton, Lacey, and Emily. Colton is married and is the youth minister in the Stantonville Church of Christ in West Tennessee. Lacey is a senior this year at Fried Hardeman, and Emily is a junior in high school. And we're excited for a lot of reasons. David's a good friend of mine. I had the privilege of working with him. And I know not only he knows God's Word and understands parenting from that perspective, but I also had the privilege of seeing how he and Tracy parented their children and learned a lot as I watched them and have thought a lot about some of the things they did and some of the principles that were used and really were a tremendous example. And David's too humble to say anything like that, but I really have been impressed by them, and so I know that'll be a blessing to us. And without taking up any more of his time, David, we'll let you come and speak to us.
Good evening. It is good to be together. I love the Graymere congregation. I grew up hearing about the Graymere congregation all my life because my mom and dad, Roy and Claire, are there. They were a part of this congregation in early 60s, and they left shortly after Jerry and Fern Hill left to go do mission work in the Northeast. He was the preacher here at Graymere. They followed them up to do mission work also in the Northeast, and so I ended up being born in New York. You can tell by my accent, I'm sure, and then grew up here in the South and grew up in Centerville, just down the road from you, and grew up hearing a lot of great things about the Graymere congregation. So it's an honor to be with you because of all the good that I've heard through the years about this congregation, and also to be with Catherine and Andrew. What a blessing they have been in my life. Andrew's father, Dave, and my father-in-law, Leon, have been good friends, and they worked in ministry together for probably about a decade, several years ago, and in Little Rock. And so the Phillips family has been a part of our family on my wife's side for a lot of decades and just means the world to us. And then the opportunity to work with them in the Mount Juliet congregation has been a rich blessing. I tell Andrew from time to time, we've still not recovered that he's left us. What a powerful and wonderful work that he did there. And I'm thankful that he is where he is now. And I'm thankful that our friendship just continues. And not that you need to know it, but I'll just tell you, I call Andrew often, and like, Andrew, and I just treat it like he's just still right across the hall from me. And I'm like, hey, what would you do on this particular topic? Or if you're teaching this class, what's a good resource to read? And I just value that kind of relationship so much with Andrew. I want to tell you something, and I know it sounds bad when you almost have to begin with an apology. I'm not trying to make this funny because Bill Cosby can make it hilarious, and if I tried to copy Bill Cosby, that would go over like a brick. So really, I'm not trying to do that. I'm just trying to get your attention at the beginning of how this little comedy routine ends. Some of you have probably heard it. It's where Bill Cosby talks about parenting, and he talks about the first parent that ever was, and it was God. And he created his children. And he got Adam over there to the side, and he said, now listen, son. He said, there is a tree right here in the midst that I don't want you to eat. Now, do you understand that, son? Yes, father, yes. Okay, don't eat it, okay? Yes, father, okay. He starts to walk away, and he overhears him saying, hey, Eve, did you know that we have forbidden fruit around here? And she said, no way, yeah. He turns around and says, now, do you understand? I said, don't eat that. And they say, oh, yes, yes, father, well, yes. And so he leaves for a few minutes, and he looks back, and
sure enough, they're having the forbidden fruit break. And so he comes back and he says, what is this? He says, Adam, I told you. He says, I don't know. He says, Eve, why are you doing this? He said, and then he looks back at Adam and Adam says, hey, she made me do it. And Eve's like, oh, no, he did it. And then it's back and forth. Did not, did two. And at that time, he's thinking, why didn't I quit with the elephants? But then his next thought is kind of that glimmer in his eye. He's figured out how he's going to punish them. And he says, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you your own children to raise. Now, when we think about that, and we think about Psalms 127, that short chapter where it's a beautiful chapter about families. It's in that chapter that he says, children are a heritage of the Lord. A heritage is an inheritance of. And so, we know that children aren't punishment. We know that children are a rich gift, an awesome gift. And so what I would like to begin is I'd like to begin from hearing from you. The first time you held probably your firstborn, it doesn't have to be your firstborn, but I would like to hear descriptions, phrases, maybe a sentence. What did you think, what did you feel when that first baby of yours was placed in your hands? What did you feel?
Miracle.
All right. Okay.
What in the world have I done?
Okay. It's that with that Wow, responsibility. All right. Who else? What else?
Relief.
All right. Coming from a mother. All right. Okay. What else? What did you feel?
We went through infertility treatments and talked about adoption, and I told him, I said, I just want one that looks like me. And when they pulled him out, was my spitting image, I just said thank you.
All right. Another example of a wonderful gift. All right. What else do you feel?
Sense of responsibility.
Yeah. All right. I want to hear from two or three more of you. I'm not looking for something brilliant. I'm looking for emotion, too. I love what you said, but what emotions did you feel?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But like literally for an hour, I was this far off the ground that I was floating.
Yeah. What else?
Overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And the responsibility.
Yeah. And that giving birth process and that 9 months before it, and then that feeling of, wow, here we got this baby to raise. Boy, you tuck all that into one day. That's an amazing adventure. Anybody else?
Scared.
Yeah, scared. Isn't it amazing how many emotions you can feel in one 24-hour period there? You know, I think about...
Those things I had with us is Landry's crying. I pulled them out and put them on the table. Of course, they're beating them over the head. I just want to wash them off. I got my kid, stop. And,
yeah.
And he's crying. And I said, it's okay, buddy. And as soon as he heard my voice, he stopped. Of course, he couldn't see, but he turned toward me. And immediately, I felt that, wow, I'm a dad now.
Yeah.
It was just... It was incredible.
Yeah.
Because he heard me, you know, in the one way, I talk to her belly all the time.
Yeah.
And it was just neat to say, you're mine, you know.
That's cool. You'll never forget that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think. Yeah. You know, I think about our oldest son, Colton. He was born in Long Island. We went back up to Long Island, worked for a few years after college. And so he was born up there and on the Southamptons of Long Island. That wasn't where we were living, but that's where the doctor was delivering. And it was about a 30, 45 minute drive for us to get out there. But they said, you're going to love Southampton Hospital because it's a small hospital. And you'll probably only be maybe one other person not delivering. They said nobody else will be delivering, but there probably only be one or two others in the hospital the whole time you're there as far as where the babies are. So you're going to get all kind of great care. And so we're going on this tour of this little like 3 or 4 story hospital, little small hospital, and they're showing us this. And then he was 10 days, almost 2 weeks overdue, and it was a full moon. And wow, did that make a difference? We got to that hospital in the middle of the night, and all of Southampton was at that hospital delivery. And so we barely had, you know, this is back in the olden days, and Southampton was, anyway. And so you know, that was back where, you know, you went to the delivery room, And no, you went to the labor room, then the delivery room, then the recovery room. And so they inch us away into the labor room as they rolled somebody else out. And then there was a real quick process there. And so then they're like, oh, we don't know if we have a delivery room available. And so then finally they get a delivery room and we have a baby. And they literally, they take and just kind of tally him off a little bit. And they say, hey, we've got to deliver a baby next door. Is there any way you can just hold me for a while? And, you know, this is my first child, you know, and I'm the youngest in the family, so it's not like I had a lot of experience with babies, you know. And so I'm in this cold room, and my wife is, you know, recovering, kind of passed out, and I'm on this stool just sitting beside her, and I'm holding this newborn for probably 45 minutes to an hour, and it's just us. You know, and just that moment of just staring down in his face and just all of that, you know, those are things that you look back as a parent and you treasure those moments. You guys in some way have moments like that or that exceed that. And as we begin here, I just want to remind you of where the journey began. And I remind you how awesome it is, the gift that God gives us to be a part of this journey. But the highest mountain peaks in our life of joy and love are the only peaks that have the ability to create the deepest pain. And so as much as we love our children, and as much as they mean to us, they have the ability to also bring us that deep pain. And they are individuals. And they'll reach a time where they'll be out from under our care. And they can rebel. They can make horrible decisions. And they can do things that probably will not stop us from loving them, I hope. But it nevertheless could create a lot of pain. But that same mountain peak has the ability to also create a lot of joy and a lot of awesomeness all through our life. And tonight, what I want to urge you to do is I want to urge you, if you need to recommit, if you need to step back up to the plate, I want to urge you to think of how important this journey is and make sure that we are giving our all to invest everything that needs to be invested so that we are preparing our children for the things that matter the most. Look, we can't control whether or not they succeed or fail spiritually, career-wise, socially. We can't control all that. But how awesome would it be if everybody in this room could say, I did the very best I could do. If I could rewind time, I might change some things, but for the most part, I did the very best that I could do. I don't want to sound like an old guy, because number one, I don't want to think of I'm an old guy, but I am an old guy in ways. I understand that, all right? I've got a son that's married, and that's just a reminder this past June when he got married. I'm becoming an old guy. But I will speak like an old guy and tell you this. You turn around twice and they're gone. That holding that newborn seems like yesterday to me. But yet in June, I stand in for a church family and performing a wedding ceremony. And so I want to remind us, if you've come here tonight hoping that, you know, I don't know what your expectations are. If you think maybe there's some kind of fancy model that you're going to learn tonight, if you think that there's something really clever that maybe you've never heard tonight, I really doubt any of that will be so. But I hope that all of us leave here doing what's right consistently. Now, here's what's interesting. We just talked about the beginning. And here's what I want us to think about for a lot of the rest of the night, especially this session. Next session, we'll come back and we'll kind of come back through different stages. But for right now, I want you to think about the end. You know, Stephen Covey, you guys, many of you read Stephen Covey's stuff? You know, back several decades ago, I think he was the one. Now, maybe he copied somebody else, but I think he was the one that kind of made famous the saying, begin with the end in mind. And if he wasn't the one that made it famous, he sure made it famous for that generation. He was the one that continually talked about, begin with the end in mind, begin with the end in mind. I think about right here,
is a sketch of the rear of our building.
And I know it's odd for me to show you because it's really ugly. But right there is a sketch of the rear of our church building, okay? Now, what's interesting about that sketch of the rear of the church building is that looks exactly like the rear of our church building. I mean exactly. But you know what? That was an architectural rendering before one of those additions were done. You see the point being made? An architect sat down and said, you know what we can do? They've got to have more classroom space. Here, let me show you where we could put that. And he started sketching. He said, you know what? We can make it three floors. Look, it'll fit right in there. Look at this. Look, that's what it could look like. Do you guys want that? The elders studied it over. A lot of deacons studied it over. And after a lot of decisions were made, went back to that architect and said, yeah, that's what we would like. And now, isn't it interesting? But it's no surprise, is it? That that's what it looks like. Isn't it interesting how often we expect things to end up like we planned them if we begin with the end in mind? Have you considered how rare it is for pilots to miss their destination? Remember back, what was it, a year or so ago when those two guys fell asleep in the commercial airline and they overshot one of the... It was one of the Northeastern. I'm not sure if it was one of the New York airport, but they overshot it for like 20 minutes. And then finally they thought... that at first they thought maybe they were having a fight with each other, and I don't know what they ended up... Because for a little bit it came out they were asleep, and then it came out that they were feuding with each other. And I'm not sure how that actually settled out. But I'm just saying, that made the national news because it's rare for airline pilots to miss their destination. Now think how many flights are made every day. And they hardly ever miss their destination. Why? They never take off. And then when they get up, say, hey, where are you going to stop for supper tonight? You ever done that with your spouse? Well, I don't know. I don't know. And you get mad at each other because you can't decide. And finally, we're not just going to go supper. You can't decide. And you go back home. And well, guess what? You missed your destination. Why? Because you began something that you had no idea what it was even supposed to be. Now, think about pilots. They chart out. They have a flight plan. They know before the engines are started, they know the destination. What's the destination for you as a parent toward your child? How horrible would it be if one of the most important responsibilities God has ever given us, we've gone about it on a day-to-day basis, and we really don't even know what our flight plan is? We have not really considered what the destination is. And here's another thing that Stephen Covey made famous. He says that the pilots not only know their destination, but they stay off course about 90% of the time. Because crosswinds are constantly blowing you off course. And he says, so either the autopilot or the pilot himself, maybe that's to say herself. I stand on the side. We don't have time to be on subject, but I was really being sexist. I didn't realize I was, but I was, all right? And I was standing beside an airline pilot the other day. I said to my wife, she must be driving her husband's car. Wasn't that bad to say? You know, it's one of those, my other car is a plane. You ever seen that? You know? But no, she was the pilot. But anyway, so you got this pilot that is constantly making adjustments. They're constantly making adjustments. The entire flight. What do you do it going down the road, right? You're on a straight stretch. And what do? The whole time, you're going down a straight stretch. You're constantly making adjustments. Why? Because you know where you're headed. You know that you're planning on staying between those yellow and white lines all up through there, so you constantly make adjustments. Listen, if we don't know where we're going with our children, we don't have a plan, we can't even make the adjustments. You go a little bit off course. What happens when you go a little bit off course for 5 years? If you're trying to go that way for 5 years, you're way off course. Well, you can get way off course when you're making no adjustments. What about if our day is made up of constant adjustments? Because we know the destination. I want us to look at one destination that when I start making this, I think it's all important, very important to us. But I think a lot of us would probably say, well, yeah, of course, but we can't overlook this one. And then I want us to look at another destination that we do really need to spend probably more time looking at details. Not that per se it's more important, but there's probably more details that we need to think about with that one. But the first destination we need to look toward
is we need to look to the reality. If you have your Bibles open to Genesis 1, I want us to scan a few things real quick. In Genesis 1, 27, we have the beginning of the human race. In Genesis 1, 27, so God created man in his own image, in the image of God. He created him, male and female. He created them, so he made mankind. After his image, meaning that two arms, two legs, probably not. God's a spirit. But there's something about us that's like God. So what is that? Skip down to the second chapter, verse 7. And the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground, and he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living being. The older translations would say man became a living soul. God didn't breathe in the nostrils of the elephant or the dog or the cat. They're all alive, but they're alive physically. God breathed in the nostrils of man because he put in man a soul. And that's why Psalms 127 speaks of children being a heritage of God. They came to us with a soul. That's why when David's baby died, he said in Samuel, he said, he shall not come to me, but I shall go to him. He knew that that child, as young as that baby was, that baby came to this earth with a soul. Jerry Jenkins was a great preacher at Roebuck Church of Christ and died in recent years. I was listening to a family explain that when their firstborn was born, he came to the hospital to see them. And this guy said it this way. He said, I knew what he said was true. But he said, to hear it in a prayer at that time in our life where we were holding our firstborn, he said, I'll never forget that moment. And his brother Jerry Jenkins prayed a prayer of thanksgiving for this child. He also prayed for the mother and the father that were holding the child that has been given a soul that will live forever. You hold a newborn, what are you holding? It won't go out of existence. You're holding a soul that will spend an eternity in heaven or in hell. That's a sobering thought. So when we think of a destination, and we think about beginning our parenting with the end in mind, where is our child going to spend time? And again, I'm not saying you and I can live their life. And I'm not saying that as parents we're totally responsible for where our children spend eternity. If we believe that, we believe once saved, always saved. All I got to do is do my job. And, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, they're saved. And they can't ever be lost. And no, they can reach a point where they can decide how they're going to live. And they can decide if they want to remain faithful, if they want to rebel. But that does not alleviate us or relieve us as parents of the responsibility that we have to say, where are we pointing them? What kind of foundation are we putting under them? How are we doing as parents guiding them toward an eternal home? And the sobering fact is, what home are we guiding them towards? And so when we think about beginning with the end in mind, the ultimate end is that eternal end. How many of you guys would like for your son to graduate 5-star recruit? Could be considered one of the best running backs in the nation. Go to any school. What about an honor roll kid that scores so high on their ACT at any Ivy League school is sending mail to them? What about a musician at a young age is called a prodigy and could go anywhere in the music career in their life? What would a child gain if they gained the whole world and lost their soul? What could a child or parents give in exchange for their soul? Listen, this American mindset that says our children have to be the top of something, that's a wonderful mindset to have as long as yours is, they have to be on top of their spiritual life. And if that's not the topic, you're playing the long game with your children. You've got a destination in mind for them, but it's the wrong destination. Now, am I saying they can't excel at other things? No, not at all. But it's priorities. Which one, when we think about the end, which one is the most important? Not verbiage, but it proves by the time we spend with them in that area. It proves by the instruction we spend in that area. If you don't want your child to go to the Olympics, you're going to spend a lot of hours training in whatever sport that's in. If you want your child to go to heaven, you're going to spend a lot of hours training in spiritual things. And so when we think about what is that final destination, begin with the end in mind. But there's also another ending. And this other ending is, it too is very important. And it has a lot to do. It has a lot to do also with the eternal end also. But as we think about this other end, I want you to think about, and I don't know if this little handout that you have illustrates this well, and if it doesn't and it kind of confuses you, just kind of scrap it in your mind and just take the reality that when we think about when a child is born, pretty much 100% responsibility of that child is upon the parents. What can a child do the first week of their life?
Cry.
Yeah. So if they feel like they need something, they can cry. Now what if I ask you right now, if let's say you have a child in college. Think how silly this would be if I said to you, what can your child in college do? Can they walk? Can they talk? Can they use the bathroom themselves? You know, what can your child... And think, okay, now wait a minute. Okay, so let's pretend we're Martians and we haven't figured people out yet. Oh, so you mean something changes. You mean they come in and they are, the first few days of their life, 100% dependent on you. In other words, you are responsible for almost everything that they need. And then you fast forward down here to somewhere between 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 years of age. And hopefully somewhere down here, you're not responsible for hardly anything. And then you think about beginning with the end in mind. What's your game plan to get that kid that is 100% responsible for you except for being able to cry? What is your game plan for them to be pretty much, what, 95, 96, 97% responsible for themselves? Now, I'm not trying to say that there's a magic age here, but I'm saying you and your spouse need to think about what that age is, because for your family, it ought to be a magic age. But what is the age that you expect your child to be responsible? And I don't mean they're not responsible along the way, but I'm talking about what's the age that you expect them to say, you know what, son, daughter, this is what we've been working toward. This is your time to be a man or to be a woman. And maybe you know, in our culture, it's hard to do that at 18. If they go to college, it's hard to make enough money to stand 100% on that. And so, you know, in third world countries and other countries around the world, adolescence is a lot of times continued to begin at like 9 to 10 years of age and end at like 18 or 19 years of age. But here in America, the way we have kind of done things in recent generations, our feeling or perspective about adolescence is usually that it begins more like 12 or 13 years of age, and then it goes more like 20 years of age, 21. And so, but you guys need to talk to each other. And you need to figure out what is that age? What is that age where because again, it's your flight plan. What is your time where you're able to say to each other, as you make continual adjustments along the way? Why are you making adjustments? You're making adjustments because you know that there are things that you need to teach them when they're two or three, so they're going to be ready for that day. And then the responsibility is going to go deeper when they're six and seven. And the responsibility is going to go deeper when they're 10 or 11. And the responsibility is going to go a lot deeper when they're 14 or 15.
And responsibility is going to go a lot deeper when they're 18. And responsibility, well, time they're 21, 22, it's a handoff. Wish you well.
Let's not pick the exact age, because as a group we might not all agree on, and that's fine. But for a few minutes, I want to hear from you. What are things, and I'm not talking about a specific child, okay? So I'm not talking about that specific. I'm talking about if you're going to talk about a child that you're still going to have in the future, or if it's any of your children or whatever. I'm talking about in a very general sense. Let's say at the time that is the handoff says, at this point, you're graduating from college, 22 years old, I want you to be responsible. What is that handoff going to be? In other words, it's your flight plan. Where you say, at this age, this is what I want my child to be able to do. This is, more importantly, this is what I want them to become. I want them to be. What is that person going to look like if you as parents get your way? And if you as parents do your part in the training. Hey, can I just tell you right now, the thing that crawls underneath the fingernails for me is when people start giving teenagers a bad rap, and they're the age of a teenager's parents. I just want to be like, you're kidding me. You're going to blame this 14-year-old for the way they are, and you're not going to hold their parents responsible at all? How do you think that 14-year-old got like that? You think this 14-year-old girl is dressed immodestly and you're going to blame her? She had a mama or daddy that bought those clothes. Hello. Guys. Anyway, like I said, they get on my phone. All right? It's like the adults do not want to take responsibility. Why don't we walk around saying, look at these teens. Do you look? We have terrible parents. That's what we ought to be saying. Mom and Dad, man, you are losing it. What are you hoping that they're going to be? A prostitute? But they're another 21? And so, alright, so let's think about this. 21, 22 years old, or whatever in that age, what is it that you want them to be? Let's come up with a list at least. Hey, who's got a pencil? You take notes first? Broad principles here. Broad principles. What do you want them to be? Because, by the way, I beg you to go home and do this homework assignment. This will be your only homework assignment. And obviously, you're not going to be back here next week for me to know if you did or not. But please, please, I beg you, go home and you and your spouse, or if you're a single parent, you and God have a talk about it. But you come up with however many main principles that you want your child to be. And you make sure that those things are either posted in your mind, or they're posted where you guys can see them, and you don't ever lose sight of those, because every day you're going to be making adjustments so that those things are fulfilled when the time comes. All right, so what is it? What is it that you want that 22-year-old to be when you hand the reins over? Hey, good knowing you. Not really, but you know what I'm saying.
Driven.
Okay. Want them to be driven. How else would you state that? I like it, but...
Ambitious. I was going to say successful, but maybe at 22, you haven't reached that. But I want them to have the drive, the oomph within themselves to push and want more and to
okay.
be better. And
okay, and let's do this. You said successful, and let's couple with that. I like that. Let's couple with that also, as we think about being able to make adjustments along the way, let's couple with that also a finisher.
Yes.
You know, there's not many people that if they're willing to stick with things long enough, they usually, that's driven, and they usually are successful. It's other people that don't succeed. Alright, what else? What else you want?
Tested.
Alright, what do you mean by that?
We talked about this morning, but not that I want my kid to fail, but I want him to experience failure.
Yeah.
And because I had a lot of friends in college who never did, mom and dad are always there. And so when they got out in life, and that first thing of failure hit, they didn't know what to do. And that was one of the greatest things my parents taught me, was how to fail. Because
you are a successful failure.
I myself in the back all the time.
That's awesome.
But it's good, because when you think of the culture that we live in,
yeah,
little Johnny should be starting. You know, he should have made A on the test. His teacher's fault. All those things that parents try to do for their kids. I want my kid to be able to do his own thing.
Yeah.
And to be able to get up if he gets knocked down.
Yeah.
And the big test is when he really should be starting and he's still not.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. It is one thing when you think you're capable of starting and you're not, but it's even another challenge when you know you are, but the coach's kid had you positioned. What a wonderful thing to experience in life. It's hard as can be in the middle of it, but you learn some lessons there that are valuable. Hang on to that. You don't happen to remember the proverb? My dad is like a scholar in proverbs. That there's a proverb that says, and it may be in, no, I think it's even in the older. I was going to say it may be only in a modern, but there's a proverb that says about a kid like losing his temper or something like that, and then it says if you rescue him, you'll only have to do it again. And that's brilliant. That principle is what you're talking about. If we're going to always go in and scoop underneath our kids so that they don't ever feel pain, we'll just have to keep doing it and doing it. And then we get them up there to 22. And now the question, are you going to follow them around all their life trying to make sure that they're spoiled and not ready for reality? Because when do you do your most growth? Well, maybe in your 20s, but I'm just talking about in general.
Oh, physical growth?
No. Like spiritual, even just like endurance.
In hardship.
Yeah. You think about it. It's in our hardships that you grow. And so what we too oftentimes do as parents, we want to keep our children from experiencing that hardship, which is what you're talking about, right? And so then what we do is we make weak children. Let me give you just a quick example. And I'm not giving you this to say, oh, look at David. I'm not. I'm just trying to give you something to if you apply to how it goes to your life. My middle child is a social person, all right? My other two really aren't. But my middle one is. She gets along with everybody. Every teacher she ever had is just like, oh, Lacey's the best student, you know? And it's just all that. And you're just like, you know? And so Lacey gets, and they go to Mount Juliet, to the public schools. She goes into her middle school year, and it's probably about seventh grade, and I heard her and some of her friends talking one day. And she said, yeah, I don't know why she hates me. And then one of her friends spoke up and said, boy, you can tell she does. And one of her other friends laughed and said, it's hilarious. And this is kind of early in school. And I was like, Lace, who hates you? And she named one of her teachers. I said, are you sure? And she's like, trust me, Dad. I don't have a clue why. None of my friends. But it's like the talk in our class, like why she hates you. And so I said, okay, keep me posted on it. And so she would come in from school. And she'd be like, yeah, today she said this. And it would just be something mean she would say to her. You know, and so it was really cool, because think about it, because I kind of had your dream in mind for my kid too, which my child, this girl I'm talking about, Lacey, is there now. She'll graduate this calendar year, school year, I mean. And so I thought, wow, this is my opportunity, because it's kind of hard to teach somebody when everybody likes you, you know? And I said, hey, Lace, this will be a wonderful opportunity for you spiritually this year. She said, why is that? I said, you realize you're going to have the opportunity to see if you can turn the other cheek, if you can go the extra mile. You're going to have the opportunity to show a teacher respect because of their position, not because they deserve it by the way they're treating you. I said, and you're going to have the opportunity to see if whenever you walk out of that teacher's block, you can either let that teacher ruin the rest of your day, or you can say, you know what, this is my day. And I'm not going to let that teacher ruin my day. And so after you walk out, let go of it. And just go through the rest of your day. And I said, now, to do this right, I'm going to be praying for you. And you better be praying every day. Because this is going to be tough when the teacher is praying for you. But you let this be a great experience for you. That was such a learning experience for her. She'd come in and she'd go, Dad, I'm praying about it. She said this today, and I just tried to smile, and I spoke to her kindly on the way out the door, and it went on pretty much all year. And so, yeah, the worst thing we can do is treat our kids, you know, the American way, especially the middle class. The middle class American way you treat your child is you put them on the pedestal and your whole life just goes around them and you bow to them all the time. And you grow some messed up kids. And so the best thing you can do is say, guess what? You live in a real world. And I just want to help you grow and mature in this real world. Because when I hand the reins off to you one of these days, you're going to have a boss that mistreats you.
And you're going to have a best friend that stabs you in the back. You're going to have bad things happen in life, and I don't want it to shake your faith. I don't want you to react to things in an ungodly way. And so how awesome is it when you get to walk with them and keep their spiritual journey healthy as they're going through those things? So that's an awesome one. All right. Oh, we got to start wrapping this up. All right, throw out 4, 5, 6 more real quick. What do you want them to be?
Servant leaders.
Servant leaders.
But just, I mean, both in their relationships and in their career, the way to lead and to serve, looking for opportunities to serve and whatever their gifts are.
Yeah, and a real simple parenthesis beside that would be unselfish. So if you want them to be a servant leader all through these years, you've got to be raising an unselfish kid that also can lead. And so you're going to be making those adjustments all along the way to make sure that happens. What else you want them to be? Yeah, financially responsible. That's huge. That's huge. Listen, I can give you some sob stories of middle-aged kids that have drained the entire retirements of their parents. Whose fault is it?
Parents.
The parents' fault. You want to keep giving your kids money while both of them have better jobs than you have ever had. When I say both of them, I mean their spouse, their husband and wife, have better jobs than you ever had. And you're going to give them money until the day you, well, until it runs out. Because they're going to spend more than you can save. And so if you want to do that, what you do is let them get 22 years old and just keep giving them money. Because guess what? They are never going to come to a day. You know, they're not going to be 27 years old and taking your money for 27 years and walk up to you and say, hey, Mom, Dad, I just wanted you to know, me and my spouse, we've been talking, and we decided we're not going to take any more money from you. That's a knee slapper, if you believe that. All right? It is not going to happen. They can be 50-year-old children taking money from their 80-year-old parents, and they still will not come up. It will have to be the parent. It will have to be the parent that says, we're not giving you any more money. It's time for you to be responsible for you. But all along the way, and let me just throw out a couple. Let them be responsible for things that's theirs. And you want to encourage them then. Somebody's going to throw out work ethic in a minute. That goes right along with that. You want good, strong work ethic? The way to produce good, strong work ethic is a lot of things when they're younger, but when they get on up, make sure that they have to pay for things that they want badly. And they will love the opportunity to work. Because once that cell phone gets cut off for a couple of months because they didn't have enough money, and don't rescue them. Don't run in there. Oh, we got to turn our cell phone on. What would we do if they didn't have a cell phone? You'll live just like I lived for the first however many, up 10 years of my life. All right? They can live without a cell phone. But guess what? They're going to want a cell phone so bad, they're going to be like, hey, you think maybe I could wash your cars? Can I vacuum? Could I go out and mow the yard? I know it's December, but hey, I really need some money. And all of a sudden, this kid is going to get some wonderful work ethic when they realize, hey, I've got to pay for it. And when they get to be driving, my opinion is, don't ever buy gas for them because they're always going to want to go. And as long as they have to put the gas in it, they're going to make sure that they make money. They're going to make sure. They're not going to be too busy to babysit when that person calls unless you're the one paying for the gas. Then all of a sudden, they don't have time for that. And then all of a sudden, they get to be 22 years old and they don't know how to work. And it's because nobody's ever taught them to work because they've never been responsible. And so, all right, who else? What else?
Humble.
Huge. Yeah, big time. A lot can be said about that. Pride and arrogance, all the things that goes along with that. Hey, kids can do a pretty good job of being arrogant. And we as parents can do a pretty good job of feeding it. Why does your kid want the best tennis shoes? If it's because of arrogance, you need to think twice as a parent about letting them have it. Why do they want the car they want? If it's arrogance, don't let them have that car. You're the parent. You get to raise arrogant kids, or you get to raise humble kids. Can kids have nice tennis shoes and be humble? Yeah, parents have worked at it if they can. But now it's not the kid, it's the parents. And so, yeah, humility is huge. It's huge, and it's a journey. Notice, none of these things we're talking about do you do in one step. Nothing we're talking about, you say, well, you know what, if you just do this right when they're 6, it takes care of itself. All right, if you just do this right when they turn 13, it'll take care of itself. Or what about this one? Hey, honey, he's a senior. He's going to be leaving us in 3 months. Wow, we got a lot of things we need to teach him.
That's how a lot of parents operate. Because keep in mind, they haven't started with a flight plan. They had no idea they were really trying to accomplish something when the child was leaving home. And so all of a sudden, now they're saying, they're laughing. The parents are laughing between themselves. He will never be able to get himself up for class in the morning. How's he going to handle taking care of his finances? He doesn't have any money unless we get it to him. You start going through all these things, and then you wonder, why do some kids go to school in their freshman year is a disaster? Now, I know this wouldn't be true in every case, but the rule of thumb is, it's because the parents made it that way. The parents helped the freshman year be a disaster back when this kid was 3 years old, and he could go all day long, every week, and not have one responsibility. 3-year-old needs some kind of responsibility. Now, let's put all this under the umbrella of humility, okay? We need to be humble as parents, but that doesn't take away from the fact that we are the authority. And some of you are probably not going to like when I say it this way, but I'm going to say it the way our Christian counselor says it. It is a privilege for that child to live in your house. Okay? You're the authority. It's your house. And it is a privilege for that child to live with you as a mother and father. Therefore, they need to be respectful. They need to have responsibility because they're part of the house. It's not their world. They're not on the pedestal and you're revolving around them bowing. God, husband and wife, child. They are a part of your family. It's not you are a part of their family. And when you can keep that in order, it becomes huge of what we expect of them that ends up being beautiful. Because when you keep that order right, the kids feel secure. You get that out of order, and the kid feels horribly insecure. And we could use a lot of illustrations of that. A lot of those illustrations, they're true, even if a divorce is not involved, but you see it more readily when a divorce is involved. You'll see how insecure the kid is. Alright, we have got, I tell you what, next session will be really short. Is there anybody though that, and I'll try not to comment after them if you say them, but let's get this list together. Is there anything else?
Able to stand up for themselves and their beliefs and with others who are being
distributed. Okay. That sounds like the first few verses of Proverbs 31st chapter when she was trying, the mother was trying to raise a king. He was a boy now. She was trying to raise him. And she told him, I want you to be able to stand up for those that are speechless. And so it's the idea of being able to stand up for what's right yourself. That's conviction. And then the compassion to speak up for others that don't have a voice or can't stand on their own. Huge.
Positive or happy.
Yeah.
I don't mean stuff, but content maybe.
Good.
Because all this driven and all these things and failures can tear people apart. If you're not happy, you'll be looking for it in a bar, in a ball game, some other person.
Yeah.
So contentness or happiness and kind of be a positive force, whether it be with your family, friends, church, your workplace. That negative person, and we all work with one, they destroy everything they touch.
Yes.
Amen.
Yes. Yes.
How about the word?
Yeah. Huge. What else?
That's a trait to be able to be content while maintaining that motivational drive. A lot of people cannot do that.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be able to like yourself and laugh at the stupid things you do.
Yeah.
And because we all make mistakes. And you know what? I've seen, I'm no expert in parenting, but I've seen kids make little mistakes and their parents just beat them down emotionally about it, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know how you can be happy when you feel like you got a handle hung around your neck with it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And what about if we the whole time have in view the journey, then when we see our kid make a mistake, it's not the end of the journey. We look at it and say, oh, okay, so you made a mistake. I'll tell you what, let's correct that and let's talk about how that affects the journey. Now we have something to work on. And it really changes our perspective.
I have a quote framed in my office at home that says, be happy with what you have while working for what you want.
Okay.
And I think that's awesome. I think that's something.
Good. Who else was?
I would want my child to be a person of high integrity and dependability because I find those things are both really rare. A lot of people are flaky, and I wouldn't want a flaky kid.
Yeah, very good. High integrity and dependable. Boy, those are huge. And, you know, all these things, think about how it's going to make a better spouse one day, a better parent themselves, which means you're going to have better grandkids. Don't you feel sorry for the people that finally get grandkids and have grandkids you don't even like to be around? I mean, how sick would it be to finally have grandkids one day and you're like, man, we can't go to Walmart. It'll be a sin. You know? I mean, you know what I mean? How cool would it be to be able to take your grandkids to Walmart and then be like, hey, no, don't do that. And they say, yes, sir. You know? I mean, and you get to maybe have some huge input on that, on how you're raising the first generation. You know? And so, yeah, real important. Okay. Can you read down the list real quick? And maybe if you and your spouse need like a head start as you think about this yourself, maybe you can email Andrew and maybe he could just kind of like have this ready to email out to you or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Driven, desire to be better, successful, a finisher, tested, did experience failure, servant leaders, look for opportunities to serve, unselfish, financially responsible, humble, have a work ethic, stand up for themselves and their beliefs, and also stand up for others who need help. Positive, content, to like themselves, to be able to handle mistakes, high integrity, and dependable.
Okay. One more we probably ought to add on there. You can add it.
I'm sorry. I want my children to be faithful. I want them to want to know God.
Yes. Faithful.
You know, that's something we can force on them in their kids, drag them to church. But, you know, when they are old enough to make their own choice, I want them, hopefully, if we've done our jobs,
yes,
to want to continue.
Yeah. And to kind of elaborate on that, I love the way you said it. Faithful is enough said, but think about it. We want them to love God and love His church. Mm-hmm. You know, how cool is it if we can really raise an 18-year-old that says, you know what, I'm about to go to college. I can't wait to find a home church. I love the Lord's church. And that's not going to start 2 months out of 18. We're going to have to do that along the way. All right, one other one. I don't know if it's mixed in there in that, but if it's not, one we need to put in there is you need to consider what kind of child, well, it won't be a child then, what kind of person you want your child to marry. And you know Proverbs 31, verse 10 and on, virtuous woman. You know the setting for that, right? Who was that written to?
It was his sons.
Yeah. This passage about the virtuous woman, which is beautiful, is where he's saying, hey, son, a woman is saying, son, this is the kind of wife I want you to look for. And so, how awesome is that? That you can have that kind of detail. Like we look at Proverbs 31, you say, man, that's a beautiful description of a woman that's hardworking and faithful and loving and all these things. And say, wait a minute, that was told to a young man that wasn't even married? Yeah, that's what his mother said. This is the kind of woman I want you to be looking for. And so again, that's, we want to make sure that they have an image in their mind of what the right, not the right one, but the right kind looks like, all right? What's the right kind of person look like? All right, let's bow. We'll pray and we'll take a short break and we'll come back in just a minute. Our most gracious God, we thank you so much for the gift of children. And God, we are sobered and we are humbled to realize that you place within our care a soul that will live forever. And God, we ask your wisdom. Help us to think clearly. Help us to be disciplined as parents. Help us to discipline ourselves that we will be everything that our child needs in us as a parent. Help us, God, to love you and to be faithful to you as your children. God, we thank you for adopting us. And we pray that we can learn from you the beauty of parenting. And it's through your Son's name we pray. Amen.
Let's do about 10 minutes, 10 minute break.
I'll start.